Hi, Owen. Riley, listen, I know this sounds crazy, but don't go to school today.
Why?
She crinkled her nose. It's not safe, Rayanne said. Riley looked over her shoulder right at the horde of creepers, but her spiritual blindness deceived her.
What do you mean?
I was sick to death of arriving at this same impasse over and over, trying to help people understand the serious threats around them, only to sound like a lunatic. We can't really explain, but trust me, you don't want to go inside. Her boyfriend was getting impatient. She looked back at him and his loudmouthed friends.
Everything looks fine to me.
Of course it did. Off she went, like a gerbil wandering into a lion's den. By the time I spotted Jess, she and Ashlyn were headed through the entrance doors. I sent her a text. Please come outside. Who knew how long it would take her to see it, much less do it. You stay here, I said to Rayanne, and I'll check out things inside the building.
No.
She pressed her hand flat against my chest. I'm going. I'll have an easier time getting through the creepers. You keep watch out here. She sucked in a breath.
I'm ready.
Then she clamped her nose shut.
Wait.
I turned her toward me and wiped a strand of hair away from her eyes. Don't try to be a hero today. If something doesn't look or feel right, promise me you'll back off. Let me handle it. I pulled her closer. I have a new weapon now, something I've never come at them with.
Tell me you didn't buy a bigger flashlight.
I smiled. No. I turned her around so that we both looked out across the ranks of creepers. Think about it. If you're right, and faith is part of the formula that activates forces of light, surely fear must empower the kingdom of darkness. She faced me again. Fearlessness, Ray. I refuse to cower to creepers anymore. If I come face to face with Molech today, death himself, I will not give in to his demented need to see me sweat. She looked down, a disappointed frown.
What?
Fearlessness is good, Owen. She stared into my eyes. But it's not enough. You were there when I tried, Rayanne, when I prayed. It's not a try thing. It's a surrender thing. I pulled her to me. Trust me. I've got this. She wrapped her arms around me. Lord, protect him. Help him understand. And with that, she let go and popped her knuckles. The first time I'd ever seen her do that. Then she held her nose again and began her descent toward the school, walking right up to the ranks of creepers. Sure enough, they leaned away, allowing her to pass, then quickly resumed their positions. I lost sight of her in the maze of black, and I hardly moved until I saw her again, passing through the entrance doors. Talk about fearlessness. Rayanne was turning out to be the most daring person I knew. A strange movement in my peripheral vision caused me to turn my head. In the untouched acreage next to the school, grass and soil shot up into the air like a giant snake was charging underground toward Masonville High. Bizarre as it was, I couldn't tell if it was a paranormal sighting or something anyone could see. It stopped at the front line of creepers, then a being emerged, rising up from the earth with a thorn-crowned head and outstretched arms. Molech had arrived. He stayed frozen like the rest of them for several seconds, then threw his robed arms back in a dramatic, sporadic motion. At once, the creepers sprang into action, some scattering, while others rushed to form what appeared to be predetermined groups, assigned posts or something. Their movement blasted a suffocating stench my way, and I nearly gagged. Despite my determination to rid myself of every ounce of fear, I couldn't force it away entirely. But I chose to act in spite of it. That was my understanding of true courage, anyway. I texted Rayanne. Creepers on the move. I eyed the building, watching them slither in droves along the rooftop and scurry up and down the brick exterior like tarantulas. I'd lost sight of Molek. Had he gone inside? I called Rayanne, but she said everything was fine. Not a single creeper in the building. Weird. Across the campus, creepers clumped together, communicating through their mystical telepathy. That's when I saw the red-headed protester glaring at me. The depraved, one-eyed freak had trespassed onto school property and was standing outside the gym. He was surrounded by creepers, but worse than that, he bore the ghastly appearance of evil, a demented state I recognized as full-blown possession. I was mad at myself for not connecting the dots a month ago. I had no clue what he was plotting, but he was today's human culprit. I was sure of it. A homegrown terrorist about to strike. An arsonist, maybe? For all I knew, he had explosives under his baggy shirt, ticking down to detonation. I narrowed my eyes at him, and he took off running, sprinting fast around the side of the building. I had to get inside now and warn Principal Harding, but a horde of creepers clumped together like an impenetrable wall on the front steps of the school. There's a first time for everything, right? I ran at them, then forced myself to plunge forward, fighting through their soggy garments, stepping over their raunchy feet, working my way to the entrance doors. The experience was brain-twisting, the disgusting feel of damp, rough fabric against my skin, yet my body passing through them like they were mere shadows, like they existed in the air. Present, but without matter. It was so cold and dark and rank and just flat-out evil that everything in me wanted to turn back. But I didn't. I kept pushing, weaving between them like an earthworm among anacondas. Finally, I broke through. I charged into the school on a straight path to Harding's office. But wait. Why were the creepers flooding the building now, filling the foyer like frenzied maniacs? I turned, and in walked Dan. He stopped in the middle of the crowded foyer, then slipped his arms out of a camo-print hunting jacket, releasing it to the floor. No cocky grin. No words or expression on his face at all. Just hate in his eyes. And two rifles strapped to his back. Chapter 44. There was no time to react, no way to warn people or tackle him in time. Dan reached over his shoulder and clutched one of the weapons, then aimed it at the mass of students. It happened in an instant, but I somehow still managed to think about it. The unsuspecting parents devastated for life, the siblings left behind forever regretting not saying goodbye this morning, flags lowered to half-mast from coast to coast. I'd witnessed untold terror for weeks now. But this? I literally could not breathe. It seemed like slow motion. Dan racking the rifle. A few wide-eyed students attempting to run. Then the ear-shattering blasts, the screams, the collapsing bodies. It was like a dream, a far-removed experience. Stella Murphy got struck in the back and hit the cold floor. Dan stormed deeper into the school. I knew there would be more casualties with every passing second. I scrambled for a plan, a way to stop the massacre, but the shock of it all was working against me. Once again, I was helpless, standing there while Molek's merciless assault unfolded. Some students rushed past me, managing to run outside, while others tried to hide, crouching under tables, behind wall columns, whatever they could find. But I hadn't come here to save myself. Owen! Rayanne charged toward me from a side hallway, but she stopped short, dropping to the floor next to a crumpled form. I saw that it was Ashlyn, in anguish, clinging to life. Rayanne grabbed her hand, weeping.
It's okay, I'm here. I won't leave you.
Principal Harding's voice trembled over the intercom.
Lockdown, lockdown, shooter in the building. This is not a drill. I repeat, not a drill.
Classroom doors were slamming all over the building. I could still hear Dan firing off shots in the main hallway now. There were creepers everywhere, but a horde had left the foyer with him, a massive entourage of evil that had pressed in around him the second he'd aimed his weapon. Finally, the rapid gunfire ceased, and I heard Dan yell, "Jess, where are you?" Rayanne looked up at me and gasped. I had to find Jess. I wasn't afraid to search for her through the body-strewn hallways. What scared me was the thought of getting to Jess, but still having no way to protect her. "No," I scolded myself, "no fear." I took off running up a nearby stairwell. I was sure Dan would look for her in our first period class, and even though the odds were way against me, I set out to beat him there. Hopefully she was locked inside the classroom, but I had no way of knowing what he was capable of, what deadly forces had been set into motion before this day ever dawned. As I hurried down the second-story hall, there was no sign of Dan, but he'd definitely been here. His victims were scattered on the floor. Yet there were watchmen present. Some were standing guard in front of closed classroom doors. Others were on bent knee next to injured students. I kept running, trying not to let the horror of it all steal my focus. As I passed the library, someone said my name. I turned fast, and there was Lance, slumped against the wall, with a blood-soaked shoulder and a leg so shattered the bone was exposed. All the color had drained from his face. I ran to him and dropped to my knees. "Lance," I could hear sirens closing in. "Help's coming, hang on." My grudge against him seemed so petty now, so cold-blooded. As if he hadn't been brutalized enough, several creepers scurried around him, whispering cruelties to his traumatized soul, but I stayed close. His eyes started to roll back in his head like he was losing consciousness. "Help me, God," he muttered, then barely mouthed it again. I'd never known Lance to be the praying type, but... A radiant watchman came charging toward us, sending Lance's tormentors into hiding. He wore a platinum breastplate on top of flowing white garments, but no armor beyond that. I gladly moved out of his way and watched through squinted eyes as he knelt down, then placed one giant hand on Lance's wounded shoulder, the other on his mangled leg. I had no doubt this watchman was far stronger than any creeper, but it didn't look like he was here to fight. My own aching body found instant relief in his presence, convincing me he'd brought some of heaven's healing to earth. To Lance. I didn't want to move, but then a scream jerked me to my feet. Dan emerged from a restroom at the end of the hall, dragging Jess out with him, a rifle pressed into her side. A crowd of creepers led the way as he pulled her into a stairwell. As I ran that way, I noticed Jess's spilled purse caught in the restroom door, her inhaler visible among the clutter. I grabbed it and started down the stairs, holding out hope that a battalion of armored watchmen or a team of police, ideally both, would storm our school any second and confront Dan. Dan stepped off the bottom step onto the lower floor and yanked Jess behind the first door he came to, a backstage entrance to the auditorium. I hurried to the door, took a deep breath, then opened it fast and stepped inside. I looked left and caught a glimpse of Dan and Jess nearing the end of a long, narrow hallway infested with creepers. The door automatically closed behind me. It was pitch black now. I reached for my cell, but it was gone from my pocket. I couldn't see a thing. I thought I heard Jess crying, but it was hard to tell. The creepers were in an uproar, shrieking and hissing. But Dan couldn't hear all that, so I had to step lightly. I put one foot in front of the other, moving through the dark hallway, as black as the pit I'd seen Megan fall into. I felt movement all around me and loathed the thought that I couldn't see the creepers, but they could see me. Then again, that had been my reality before I'd drunk from the well. Humanity's predicament. It was like I was inching my way through a haunted tunnel, blindfolded and alone. I ran the tips of my fingers along the walls to guide me. It was so chilly in here my teeth started chattering. But I kept going until my hand grazed something ice-cold and slimy. I muzzled my mouth with my other hand, determined not to make a sound. There was no telling what I'd just touched, but I couldn't stop now. I was sure I could hear Jess gasping. I moved forward again, but kept my hands wrapped around my gut. Suddenly, I was surrounded by dim red light. I could see now that I'd made it backstage, and an overhead set of stage lights had been flipped on. I could hear Jess crying hard, and she seemed close now. Rows of black curtains hung along the side of the stage. I took careful steps between them. And there she was, center stage, Dan's terrified hostage. I spotted Dan. Unfortunately, he'd seen me, too. "I knew you'd come for her," he said. He stood stiffly behind Jess, one arm wrapped around her neck, the other clutching a rifle. She was panting, looking like she was about to pass out. I held up the inhaler and stepped forward, straining to keep my voice calm. "Dan, her asthma. She has to have this."
"She's meant to die today, with me."
I took another slow step. "No one is meant to die here today." Creepers closed in around us, and I could see now that Dan's eyes weren't right, pupils off-center and corrupted. It was rage again, looking at me from inside Dan. "Let her go." I lifted both hands now. "Take me instead."
"She stays with me."
He was sweaty, his voice erratic.
"I'm in control here."
"No." I swallowed hard. "You're being controlled." Dan narrowed his eyes, then shoved Jess to the ground, freeing up his hands to aim the gun at my head. He racked the rifle, and I saw the moment for what it was, the final second of my life. A signal to Moloch to come confiscate my soul. But when Dan noticed Jess starting to crawl away, he pointed the gun at her.
"You think you can leave me, Jess?"
She froze, laboring even harder to suck in air. This was it. Time to make my move. I tossed the inhaler toward Jess and rushed forward, knocking Dan to the ground so hard that the back of his head slammed onto the stage. The gun fell from his hands and I reached for it, but he grabbed the other rifle and bashed me in the temple with it. I fell onto my back and he rolled on top of me, shoving the rifle barrel under my chin, his snake-like eyes inches from mine. I thought for sure a bullet was about to rip through me, but I threw a fast punch and busted his nose, sending him to the floor, a bleeding mess. Both of us reached for weapons and scrambled to our feet. We stood at the same time, facing one another, out of breath, clutching rifles. Aimed at each other. Blood poured from my forehead where Dan had struck me, dripping into my eyes and down my cheek, but I didn't dare take a hand off the gun. "This is between you and me." My fingers stayed on the trigger. "It doesn't involve her." I could hear Jess taking hits from her inhaler, and hoped she'd have the strength soon to run.
"Ready to die, Owen?"
Dan asked. That instant, the spectating creepers all hit the floor, faces down, while one of the shadows behind Dan charged toward him, taking shape behind his back. Moloch. I wasn't sure I could pull the trigger before Dan pulled his, and I knew bullets were no match for the real assassin in the room. But I kept my rifle pointed at Dan, poised to shoot. The Lord of the Dead extended an arm and one of Dan's chains lifted into the air, raised up by itself, until the cuff hit Moloch's wrist, then snapped shut like the slamming of freight train doors.
"Shoot him," he hissed in Dan's ear, looking at me. "He deserves to die."
Then Moloch moved toward me, gliding behind my back.
It took everything I had to keep my eyes forward. Another clash of metal. Then Molech's voice echoed in my ears and inside my head.
Shoot him! He deserves to die!
Same vengeance, different target. The tempter moved out from behind me, and I could finally see it. A sickening glimpse of my captivity. Chain links stretched from behind me, attached to Molech's wrist. Same as Dan's. There Dan and I stood, two weapons ready to fire. One dark lord bound to us both, enticing us to destroy one another. Believe me, I wanted to pull the trigger. But that's what Molech wanted too. And I couldn't stomach letting him get his way. There was the sudden muffled sound of men's voices, then a door flung open, the same door I'd entered through. Footsteps now stormed our way. The cops are here. I lowered my weapon an inch. We have to put our weapons down. I didn't survive this standoff with Dan just to get shot by police. How would they know which of us was the shooter? Dan was cracking under the pressure, shaking so bad now that he struggled to aim his rifle. Molech moved in on his weakened prey. He jerked away from my chain and rushed at Dan, cursing and demanding that he not surrender. When Dan started to tear up, Molech snapped. He ran at Dan and slammed into him, inside of him. That second, Dan kicked my legs out from under me with superhuman speed and strength, then aimed his rifle once again. My weapon fell from my hands and slid across the floor out of reach. I'd thought for sure that whoever I had heard approaching would have intervened by now. But no. I'd been outplayed, outmaneuvered by an immortal mass murderer and a fanatical human being who'd rather kill than not get his way. I closed my eyes tight, unwilling to look at Dan's possessed face while he blasted my soul into eternal death.
"You're mine," he said.
The shot was so loud, so fast I felt nothing. I didn't move. Just waited for my heart to stop. Another shot. But then came something else. Multiple sets of doors slammed open at the back of the auditorium. I looked over and saw police rushing toward the stage, the blinding glare of flashlights coming at me. Jess wailed now, somewhere behind me. I gazed down at myself. I couldn't see a wound. And then it registered. I hadn't been struck by a bullet. I stood and spotted him. Dan backed into the side stage curtains on his knees. He aimed his rifle again. At himself. There was trauma in his eyes, but they were his own again. Molech had left him to die by himself, suicide looming over him. I held my breath, hoping Jess wouldn't see this. But before Dan could pull the trigger, armed men overtook him and pinned him to the ground. I lifted my hands fast in surrender, then turned, hoping to get a glimpse of Jess before the authorities restrained me. Jess was behind me, cradling a limp body in her lap. A girl with blonde hair. Rayanne. Not moving. Her blouse soaked with blood.
"She jumped on top of me," Jess cried to the police. "When Dan started shooting..."
I was already collapsing when officers rushed me. Already crushed, before my face ever hit the floor. Chapter 45. It didn't take long for the cops to realize I was innocent. They let me up just in time to run to Rayanne. She was on a gurney being whisked out a back door by EMTs into the parking lot. I followed them outside into the chaos, a blur of first responders, the campus perimeter lined with news crews and distraught onlookers. I made it over to her. "I'm so sorry, Ray." The words tore from the depths of my soul. "It should have been me." Her hand moved like she wanted to reach out to me, but she was too weak. An EMT warned me to get my hands off her and to make it quick. The life flight helicopter was closing in overhead.
Please hold on, Rayanne.
I fought against the lightheadedness and shock attempting to overtake me. She managed to whisper,
Is Jess?
She's safe. Because of you. She couldn't open her eyes, but her lips moved.
Pray.
I'd have done anything for her, anything, but...
I don't know how.
My heart was exploding with raw emotion. I put my ear above her lips, hanging on her every breath.
Don't leave me.
I cried it again and again, but there was no response. I gazed into the sweetest face I'd ever known, fearing the worst. She was so pale now, drifting away in front of me. I wouldn't let her leave this world without it. Without a first and final kiss. From me. I leaned in. But a heavy hand gripped my shoulder, another paramedic.
We have to take her now.
He turned to the EMT beside him. We're losing her. There was only one thing I could do. One thing left I knew to say.
I love you, Ray.
And then they took her away from me. A police officer grabbed me and escorted me to an ambulance. Under the bright lights, a paramedic examined the gash on my forehead. I kept asking what city hospital they were taking Rayanne to, but no one would answer me. A sheriff approached.
I'm told you stood up to the perpetrator, cornered him until our men arrived.
I couldn't bring myself to nod.
You should be proud, young man.
He patted me on the shoulder. I'd never been less proud in my life. They wanted to take me to the local ER and stitch up my face, but I said no. I staggered out of the ambulance into the pandemonium, nauseated and weak. The press was swarming. It seemed like all of Masonville was there, watching. There were ambulances everywhere, filling with students. Lance was among them. There were a few creepers scouting the area, but most of them had moved on, their master plan carried out. The crazed redhead stood among the crowd. Nothing more than a bait and switch that the wicked forces had used today to throw me off. Jess called to me from inside an ambulance.
Owen, here!
Still trembling and crying, she held Rayanne's leather journal out to me.
I found this on the floor. I think she dropped it.
I took it and clutched it to my chest. Jess tried to thank me, but I was desperate to be alone. I removed myself from the crowd and sirens and flashing lights, taking one laborious step after another away from Masonville High. I saw my mom in the distance, peering at the school with the other hysterical parents. But I kept going, wandering into the tall grass, then the woods. This was my property, my land to protect, and I'd failed. Failed every student at my school, dead or alive. I walked deep into the woods, allowing myself the freedom to cry, to give in to the bitter pain. I'd been played. From day one, those creepers that had been tracking me, murder, faithless, lust, they'd had an agenda bigger than me. Of course they had. I was no threat to them. The one they really wanted was Rayanne. They'd been banking on my bad influence to weaken her so they could get a foothold into her life. But they'd underestimated her, her faith. Sure, evil forces were out to harm everyone they possibly could today, Jess included. But Rayanne had to have been their prized victim. The bullseye Moloch had been determined to hit all along. He saw the power and purity in her, and he hated her for it. And like a blind fool, I fell into his trap, led her right to him. I continued through the dense woods, crying so hard I was shaking, my injured face leaking blood all the way down my shirt. I felt myself breaking on the inside in a way that I never had before, never even thought possible. I got so lightheaded, so exhausted, that I literally couldn't take another step. My knees buckled and I hit the ground, one palm pressing down on pine needles and mud and pebbles, the other clutching Rayanne's journal. Both hands stained with her blood. I was done. My self-reliance incinerated by absolute defeat. And, for the first time in my life, I let go. Completely. God, I know you're there. Please, don't turn away from me. I see it now, my stubborn pride, my hard heart. I know that you are merciful, that you shine love on humanity, but we push you aside. I have, all my life. I never took the time to know you, didn't want to. Just blamed you for every bad thing, but I've seen the way your watchmen look at evil, the contempt in their faces, and how they look at us with such compassion. I have questions, lots of them, but I want to tell you something right now. I'm sorry. Sorry for trying to control everything, and for thinking I somehow didn't deserve a shackle. I've failed miserably at trying to rescue people. I admit it. I'm the one who needs saving. I took a deep, shuddering breath. I'm asking you, God. If your son really died for me, please help me. Save me. If you'll have me, I'm giving my life to you. I mean it this time. And please, please, God, save Rayanne. Spare her life. It occurred to me that my request might be too late. No matter what happens, I curled up on my side. I surrender. Chapter 46. When I opened my eyes, my face was lying in a pool of blood. I just lay there beneath the towering trees, having no desire or strength to hold myself up. I felt like at any second my eyes might close again, and I'd fade out of this life forever. The sunlight had been replaced by overcast hues of gray. All was calm and still. Gusts of wind skimmed the side of my face, and it took me back to that lakeside carnival. I'd had an unforgettable time there with Rayanne, but while lying here now, all alone, slipping in and out of consciousness, I dreamed of the evenings I'd spent there as a child with my mother. I recalled the sound of her laughter and the feel of her hands lifting me onto the rides when I was too small to climb up on my own. How I'd begged her to stay a little while longer, over and over again. And she had, over and over again. How was it that I'd spent all these years despising her every day for her shortcomings, rehearsing her failures, while overlooking the ways she'd cared for me? No denying she'd made some serious, costly mistakes, and had lied to cover her shame. But so had I. I decided right then that if I survived this day, I would show my mom the same mercy Rayanne had shown me, forgiveness without conditions. If I survived. I was trembling uncontrollably now, battling the sensation that there wasn't enough oxygen in the air. I wanted to hate Dan for what he'd done, but somehow I couldn't. I was still angry at him, but my rage was mixed with an unshakable awareness. Dan's soul had been victimized long before he opened fire at our school, beaten and bruised over and over by the one man who was supposed to love him. Dr. Bradford had made gaping wounds in his son's soul, and evil had rushed in. A shrill whisper echoed through the woods, and my body tensed. The trees rustled, then gave way to a flurry of movement. Creepers moved among the branches like ravenous shadows. And here came my relentless adversary, staring down at me, lips drawn back and fangs exposed. Death had come for me once and for all. I didn't want to go out like this, a weakling lying limp in the dirt. Twice I tried to stand, but twice my strength failed. Molech paced circles around me like a prowling lion. I was on my back, but I shouted up at him, "I'm not afraid of you." For once, I truly wasn't. I closed my eyes and waited for his next move, the ripping away of my soul as my body bled out. It never came. Instead, I felt someone pick me up. I was lifted high off the ground, my stomach dropped and my equilibrium spun. I swayed with each step taken by whoever, whatever, had hold of me. I strained to see, but I was disoriented. Just soil and ground cover below, mixed with flashes of blinding light. I made a final effort to lift my chin, and there, where I'd been lying, was Molech, fuming and eyeing me with revulsion. He dropped to the ground and slammed his fist into the earth, raging like a caged bear. He wouldn't rest until he tasted retribution. But for now, I felt safe. A sensation that made me drowsy. I tried to stay awake, but couldn't. Darkness overtook me. I was too weak to open my eyes, but I sensed warmth on my face. Sunrise? I felt the grit of dirt under my elbows and fingertips. Desperate to see where I was, I blinked and balled my hands into fists, fighting to gain strength. And finally, little by little, I could see my surroundings. The wooded clearing, only now it was radiant with light. The water well stood there as scenic as a postcard picture. Energy surged through my veins, rousing my body. I drew in a long breath, inhaling the most invigorating scent. I knew it well. I managed to lean onto my side. There, sitting beside me, was an enormous watchman, with glistening skin and gleaming eyes, peering down at me. When he spoke, it felt like a massive waterfall reverberating against my chest.
"Don't worry. You're safe."
He was smiling at me, actually smiling. He stood and I marveled at his commanding presence, no armor, but enough majesty and light to dispel the darkest of beings. He turned to go. "Wait. I just wanted to understand. Where were you yesterday? Why did you let evil win?" He turned back to me, his gaze unwavering but kind. So kind.
"They didn't win. They fell into a carefully planned trap. You'll see, in time."
"But all those students, and Rayanne—"
"She interrupted evil's plan. Chose to offer herself to protect other lives."
It hadn't occurred to me that Jess could have been Molech's intended target all along. Not just Jess, but the tiny light she carried. And Rayanne had taken Molech by surprise.
"Is Rayanne alive?"
He lifted his eyes to the sky.
"Trust, Owen."
Peace poured over me like a soothing summer rain. I didn't want him to leave, but he wasn't subject to my orders. He disappeared into the forest. I was willing to trust. To have faith that Rayanne would survive and we would be together. And that somehow, some way, yesterday's tragedies would result in something good. I stood, and that's when it hit me. There was no sunrise pouring into the clearing like I'd assumed, no watchman here now to infuse the space with light. It was still night, yet it wasn't dark. The light I was seeing was emanating from me. It glowed on the ground all around me, and that miserable chill in my stomach was gone. Finally, completely gone. I felt warm and wonderful all over, like I'd come to life. More than that, I felt free.
free to live and love and light the way for others by telling my crazy, incredible story. Like I'm doing with you now. But this is just the beginning. There's more. Much more. You do believe me, don't you?
The End. You've been listening to The Delusion by Laura Gallia, narrated by Jonathan Todd Ross, and published by Avid Audiobooks, an imprint of W.F. Howes Limited. This work is copyrighted 2017 by Laura Gallia. This recording is copyrighted 2017 by Recorded Books.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.